Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. This episode is from the Momentum Series, resurfacing the most popular episodes from our archives to shine a light on the continued growth of companies in our network. And now, on to the show.
Welcome to another edition of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinStrat Management. Super excited today. We have the founder of FirmPilot, Jake Soffer. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Christian. Excited to be here.
Super excited to get into FirmPilot and your background. And let's just get started. Love to hear the background of what inspired you to start the company.
Yeah, I can give you a quick story. So my background's in AI, specifically natural language processing. That's just been my life and my world for 15-something years now. And after I left my last AI NLP company, didn't know what to do next, actually said, I'm not going to do another startup. That's when my brother, who's the attorney in the family, came to me and said, hey, can you help me with my marketing? He fell into the trap that many other law firms fall into that want to grow, get more clients. They hire a marketing agency. There are some great ones, but there are hundreds and hundreds that it's just burn and churn. They delivered him beautiful websites and social media and ads. I charged him a ton of money. And then once a month, he got some report that said, look how great we're doing, a bunch of vanity metrics. He didn't know what they meant. So he asked us for help, myself and called a few friends with AI backgrounds as well. We tried to just use ChatGPT to do his marketing. As you can imagine, didn't go well. Google didn't love that content. So we ended up building two of our own models, one that curates really rich knowledge so we can write really good content that Google respects and likes. And then second, we built another model that does what we call competitive blueprinting because we realized he does personal injury in Miami. You can imagine how competitive that it's so saturated and competitive. So we built a model that kind of does like an X-ray or an MRI of other firms, websites, backlinks, social media, ads, even everything, and gives us conviction of what will actually work. So our whole thesis is remove the guessing. 6 months later, we moved him from the 17th page of Google, irrelevant for the very, very competitive search, Miami Uber accident lawyer. He now ranks number one organically. And that was our light bulb moment that there's a better way to do this than just cookie cutter best practices that hundreds or really thousands of agencies and firms are doing. Yeah. And that's what led us to where we are now. We closed our seed round about a year and a half ago. We grew pretty quickly. So we just closed our Series A.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Marketing is always a big topic amongst founders. And a lot of them are like yourself in so much as they have a lot of technical skills, the ability to sell their product. But I find in my conversations, there's a knowledge deficit in how Google search rankings work. Can you give the audience a primer on why what you're doing is making a difference?
Yes. How much time you got? There are so many factors and variables into the rankings. And that's why the first thing I'll tell you is niche down. You just say, we're going to create the best marketing tool for every vertical, every platform. Good luck. It's not going to happen.
Right.
We do one thing and one thing really well. Help law firms get more clients from organic rankings and ads. It's not about building the most beautiful TikToks or anything. For us, we focus on how do we get your clients. What we can do is grab all this data based on the search terms that we see are actually fruitful for both ads and organic rankings. And we can literally see who ranks in your area, how much traffic they're getting, and start to just dissect why. It's public knowledge about what are the concepts of Google's ranking algorithm. But they don't tell you the exact weights and stuff, of course, because it should be fair play for everybody to compete. You can't just buy your way to the top. But what we've learned how to do really well with our models is run hundreds and hundreds, thousands of simulations, literally ranking forecasting. We'll create dummy content, dummy ads, and compare it to what's literally in the market, your competitors, before we just send you something that looks good or feels good. And the time, maybe like think about you hire a marketing agency and they try an experiment for 12 months. We can condense that down to 15 minutes and say, here's what would have worked best in that year. We're going to send it to you now.
So said another way, it's AI-informed root cause analysis, but you're taking it a step further and you're doing A-B testing to validate what the findings are.
Yeah. And we would need hours to talk about every factor we weigh, because there's just so many in terms of Google reviews, how quickly you reply, your velocity of getting reviews, how you reply, your backlinks and referring domains. There's the content quality. There's so many, but it's taking all of those and knowing how to orchestrate that data and being able to run all these simulations in a given point of time rather than over the course of 12 months. We can go light years faster and have conviction that this is going to work. Not let's experiment for 12 months with your marketing budget and your time and resources.
Anyone who relies on Google search is technically a potential client. But I heard you say, hey, I'm starting off, I'm going to focus on law firms. That said, do you have a larger, longer term vision, or do you see yourself being very segment focused?
We talk about it, of course, like we want to build a huge, big, great, valuable company like every startup. Of course, we talk about it, but we'd be doing ourselves a disservice and our clients if we didn't just really focus on what we do really well. And that's why I think you're seeing such push on verticalized software, because there are nuances. Google evaluates businesses that have to do with your life or your money differently than a bakery or a veterinarian or a landscaping business. The weights and everything are so different and personalized. And plus the knowledge that we have to curate to write this really good content comes from completely different sources. So yes, could we apply our architecture to other SMBs? Yes, but there is some fine tuning and we're thinking about how we do that in the future. But right now, we're just focused on law firms.
High five for being focused. It's not as often, but I still come across founders that want to blow over the ocean. And would love to hear if there was any inspiration as how you knew that this tactic of being myopic was going to serve the company.
Yeah. Luckily, it's not my first startup. So I have the advantage of already making the first 1,000 mistakes that founders make. I'm making the next 1,000 that they make, but we have a huge head start. And I know that when you try to sell to everybody, you sell to nobody. If you're looking for someone to market your law firm, your landscaping business, do you want the marketer or the law firm marketer or the landscaping business marketer? And then the inspiration was just help my brother with a problem. He kept getting burned by these agencies. So we said, there's gotta be a better way. And it was through data, not the same tired tactics in a market that's becoming more crowded. And that data-driven edge, it worked with him. So that was our light bulb moment.
So makes total sense. And obviously you're a sharp guy. And there's been a lot of founders who've used logic and intuition to launch a business, but proof's in the pudding. You're now onto a Series A. But leading up to there, what was the milestone that you knew that you were going to use to validate that you were on the right track?
Yes, there are a few. And a really good lesson I learned was simplify it down. Do people love your product? Will they pay for it once? I don't know where that thumbs up is coming from. And will they pay for it again is huge. I love like the pretty dashboards of looking at CAC and CAC payback and burn multiple and all that stuff. But this early on, I'm not saying that stuff is invaluable, but it doesn't matter. All that matters is, are you solving a need? Are you a painkiller or a vitamin? Be a painkiller. And if not, don't force it. Pivot till you find a painkiller where someone goes, I need this. I can't live without it. Two, can you get people to pay for it? And then three, those same people, will they keep paying? And especially if they'll pay you more, that was a huge indicator for us, was that we could get someone who paid us, realized they need our product, paid us again, and to a point where they said, I want more of this value that I'm getting. That was
retention and expansion.
Yes.
And so Sounds like my next question was going to be core metrics. Sounds like if there was a short list, those two were on there.
Yes.
And I agree, cash doesn't lie, 100%. Anything else, though, that you can think of as you were looking to foster adoption that was top of mind?
Yes, renewal rate. Especially if you're SMB, a little bit of mid-market like us, but SMB, renewal rate. We've seen so many SMB to even mid-market companies blow up who said, look at our retention, it's great, but they just tried to cover churn with high growth rates versus the customers that are actually up for renewal. Are they renewing rather than just have two clients upsell greatly to cover all the loss and just keep signing more and more clients to have growth cover it? So really renewals has been a super valuable metric for us.
So let's unpack that a little bit, because another big topic that I find with founders is, what's the most cost advantageous way to facilitate renewals? Is it purely web-based? Is there a customer service team in place? Other? Love to hear what your experience has been.
Yes. I would love it if we were completely self-service, but the clients we are dealing with, we realize that empathizing and just having empathy for them is what gets great renewal rates, and which is why we have best in class renewal, 90% plus, especially for SMBs, because we've really been inspired by HubSpot support. You have Salesforce and you have HubSpot. Salesforce, I could argue, is a way better CRM. You can customize the heck out of it. You can do whatever you want. But unless you're paying 6 to 7 figures in support, you submit a ticket. You hear back 2-3 days later, and it's this back and forth conversation. HubSpot, you could be the smallest client in the world. You click a button, they call you. And that's why they are like the best thing since sliced bread for SMB service. So we're really taking a page out of their book and building happiness engineering, as we like to call it. Because our clients, it's not the VP of IT at a big company. Their marketing budget is literally coming out of their pocket. So we've realized the value of just them being able to just pick up the phone and call us. It is pretty hands-on.
And did you find it was just serendipitous that you were targeting people who had operating budgets to close?
It's a great question. I haven't really thought of that. It's a myth, because knowing that every dollar they spend on marketing is literally coming out of their pocket, most of our clients have to find that budget. So it's not like they had a set one. Now we have some larger firms we work with, of course, that have it. They do annual budget reviews. So we have our feet in both camps.
And that makes total sense. One of the ways, if you think about companies like Slack were successful in the beginning, was following a similar approach. When you go directly to the user and you shorten the sales cycle, because all of a sudden you don't have to rely on a capital budget in order to get money to make your purchase. If we could pivot, so close seed, you close Series A, always founders who love to hear about the process. Sometimes it could be a bit intimidating. What was your experience like?
Keep it stupid simple is honestly what works. Use your network, cold email, and just focus on building the company. I've learned that the easiest time to raise money is when you don't need it. If you need money, you are very unlikely to raise it. And I see a lot of tactics getting too cute or too pretty when it comes to fundraising nowadays. I get emails from founders, and I respect the heck out of their hustle. I never thought of doing this, asking what I think about one of our investors. And I say, I respond like, they're great because I love our investors. And then the response is, great, can you introduce me? And of course, I'll ask the investor. I love helping out other founders. But 9 out of 10 times, the investor has said, no, I want them reaching out to us, not wasting your time. So just focus on building a company and updates. That's what did it for us. So Blumberg, who led our Series A, actually told us no to our seed round. And it was as simple as every single month, I would say, super short email. Here's 1 or 2 bullets of news about us, product, whatever. Here are 3 or 4 core metrics. ARR, customer count, renewal rate, not this crazy complicated thing. We're such a young company. A lot of those numbers are just going to change like greatly in a few months. And just kept shooting them an email, update. Got a text one day, hey, we'd love to talk to you. And I knew what that meant. Just because someone says no, it just means not right now. Unless they say, hey, we never invest in this, or we never do this early stage, then sure, you're wasting your time. But if they're just not bought in, just keep updating them and go directly to them is my point. Because these investors, they check all their emails, all their LinkedIn messages. If they didn't respond, thought that they didn't read it, going through someone else, or I've seen people now pay for like VC headhunters, like just go directly to them and be freaking relentless. Like every single month, update them and just be humble about it. Focus on doing your work, but also, hey, just wanted to send you an update. Here's how the business is growing. Simple as that. It'll pay dividends.
It is brilliant advice, and it can be hard because a lot of times we're dependent on feedback loops in order to reinforce a habit, not appreciating if you've never been a VC before and understanding how busy that they are, that just doing exactly what you're describing is a very big deal.
And then VCs see it too. This guy or girl just doesn't give up, that they value that as well. And going directly to them is the best way. Don't need to pay for anything fancy or special, just literally an email they can read on their phone every single month. And if the numbers are going the right way, they're going to buy.
And that's probably key too. Persistence and determination are omnipotent, but investors, founders should appreciate that investors have their own clients and they are absolutely looking to multiply their limited partners' capital as well.
And they have investors too. Like they're going through the same thing. They're fundraising, they're dealing with LPs. So I get it.
We're getting close to the end. Great conversation. We'd love to just hit a couple more topics before we wrap up. Operations and challenges. Biggest obstacles that you face and how you've overcome them.
Yeah. Firing myself from jobs that someone else could do better. Like I'm doing a million things that we have hired people that are so much better than me. From account management to our go-to-market staff, we've gotten really, really lucky with the people we hire. My last company, I think I over-indexed on skill set. I've matured and realized that personality is such a factor. You want people that are bought in. You want someone who's going to pick up the phone at 8 p.m. because a client's having an issue, or someone that will keep improving their skill set, come to you and say, hey, I noticed this. We should do this for our clients. An idea I would have never had is so much better than someone who's ex Google, Microsoft, MIT, whatever. I'm not that those people are super smart, like they're so valuable, but personality. So find the things that are your biggest time sucks and that you can find people, and find people who have a good skill set, but even more a personality that just like they are bought into our mission and they will go so much farther than someone who just is the best on paper.
And so how much weight do you put in the interview process versus evaluating them once they start?
A lot, way more than resumes. I used to look at resumes up and down, LinkedIn, all that. Before we hire anyone, it doesn't matter who they are, I meet them. We do 3 to 5 interviews. And we want to be respectful of their time, of course. Finding a job, your next career is a big move. It's very, very time consuming. So we want to be respectful. But at the same time, if you want to evaluate personality and is someone going to be bought in, you can't accomplish that in one call. I don't really even believe you can in two. And have multiple people on the team separately and then all get back together.
Jake, really enjoyed the conversation. I hate that, like many great things, they have to come to an end. But before we do, last question, any advice you'd give any aspiring entrepreneurs? Aspiring.
It'd be annoying. it works. A lot of the people on our sales team call me old or old fashioned because like my way of selling is literally get an Excel spreadsheet and just hammer the freaking phone and email. And when they don't answer, you do it again and again. And that's how we got our first 10, 12, 15 customers. Like, you don't need all these fancy tools yet. There is a place for them. I'm saying they're super valuable. We use a lot of those tools now, spend a lot of money on them, especially in the beginning. Just all you literally need is this thing that's in your pocket, a spreadsheet. Yeah.
I hear a theme, persistence and determination. Jake, how can listeners find
firmpilot.com? Super easy. We got a ton of stuff on our website. We even put out a ton of free resources for law firms. We love being helpful. We get messages from brand new firms that maybe they don't have a budget yet for marketing, and can't find it just yet, but by all means, use our resources. So love being helpful to small firms or even founders who just want to see how to get started.
Fantastic. Jake, thank you so much for joining us today. Audience, Jake Soffer, founder at Firm Pilot. Hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.